Chapter 41, The Fiery Furnace. The dream of the great image opening before Nebuchadnezzar, events reaching to the close of time, had been given that he might understand the part he was to act in the world's history and the relation that his kingdom would sustain to the kingdom of heaven. In the interpretation of the dream, he had been plainly instructed regarding the establishment of God's everlasting kingdom. In the days of these kings, Daniel had declared, shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. The dream is certain, and the interpretation thereof sure. The king had acknowledged the power of God, saying to Daniel, of a truth it is that your God is a God of gods and a revealer of secrets. For a time afterward, Nebuchadnezzar was influenced by the fear of God, but his heart was not yet cleansed from worldly ambition and a desire for self-exaltation. The prosperity attending his reign filled him with pride. In time he ceased to honor God and resumed his idol worship with increased zeal and bigotry. The words, "Thou art this head of gold," had made a deep impression upon the ruler's mind. The wise men of his realm, taking advantage of this and of his return to idolatry, proposed that he make an image similar to the one seen in his dream and set it up where all might behold the head of gold, which had been interpreted as representing his kingdom. Pleased with the flattering suggestion, he determined to carry it out and to go even farther. Instead of reproducing the image as he had seen it, he would excel the original. His image should not deteriorate in value from the head to the feet, but should be entirely of gold, symbolic throughout of Babylon as an eternal, indestructible, all-powerful kingdom, which should break in pieces all other kingdoms and stand forever. The thought of establishing the empire and a dynasty that should endure forever appealed very strongly to the mighty ruler before whose arms the nations of earth had been unable to stand. With an enthusiasm born of boundless ambition and selfish pride, he entered into counsel with his wise men as to how to bring this about. Forgetting the remarkable providences connected with the dream of the great image, forgetting also that the God of Israel, through his servant Daniel, had made plain the significance of the image, and that in connection with this interpretation the great men of the realm had been saved an ignominious death, forgetting all except their desire to establish their own power and supremacy, the king and his counselors of state determined that by every means possible they would endeavor to exalt Babylon as supreme and worthy of universal allegiance. The symbolic representation by which God had revealed to king and people his purpose for the nations of earth was now to be made to serve for the glorification of human power. Daniel's interpretation was to be rejected and forgotten. Truth was to be misinterpreted and misapplied. The symbol designed of heaven to unfold to the minds of men the important events of the future was to be used to hinder the spread of the knowledge that God desired the world to receive. Thus, through the devisings of ambitious men, Satan was seeking to thwart the divine purpose for the human race. The enemy of mankind knew that truth unmixed with error is a power mighty to save, but that when used to exalt self and to further the projects of men, it becomes a power for evil. From his rich store of treasure, Nebuchadnezzar caused to be made a great golden image, similar in its general features to that which had been seen in vision, save in the one particular of the material of which it was composed. Accustomed as they were to magnificent representations of their heathen deities, the Chaldeans had never before produced anything so imposing and majestic as this resplendent statue, 60 cubits in height and 6 cubits in breadth. And it is not surprising that in a land where idol worship was of universal prevalence, the beautiful and priceless image on the plain of Dura representing the glory of Babylon and its magnificence and power should be consecrated as an object of worship. This was accordingly provided for, and a decree went forth that on the day of the dedication all should show their supreme loyalty to the Babylonian power by bowing before the image. The appointed day came, and a vast concourse from all people, nations, and languages assembled on the plain of Dura. In harmony with the king's command, when the sound of music was heard, the whole company fell down and worshipped the golden image. On that eventful day, the powers of darkness seemed to be gaining a signal triumph. The worship of the golden image bade fair to become connected permanently with the established forms of idolatry recognized as the state religion of the land. Satan hoped thereby to defeat God's purpose of making the presence of captive Israel in Babylon a means of blessing to all the nations of heathendom. But God decreed otherwise. Not all had bowed the knee to the idolatrous symbol of human power. In the midst of the worshiping multitude, there were three men who were firmly resolved not thus to dishonor the God of heaven. Their God was King of kings and Lord of lords. They would bow to none other. To Nebuchadnezzar, flushed with triumph, was brought the word that among his subjects there were some who dared disobey his mandate. Certain of the wise men, jealous of the honors that had been bestowed upon the faithful companions of Daniel, now reported to the king their flagrant violation of his wishes. O king, live forever, they exclaimed. There are certain Jews whom thou hast set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not regarded thee. They serve not thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. The king commanded that the men be brought before him. Is it true, he inquired, do not ye serve my gods, nor worship the golden image which I have set up? He endeavored by threats to induce them to unite with the multitude. Pointing to the fiery furnace, he reminded them of the punishment awaiting them if they should persist in their refusal to obey his will. But firmly the Hebrews testified to their allegiance to the God of heaven and their faith in his power to deliver. The act of bowing to the image was understood by all to be an act of worship, such homage they could render to God alone. As the three Hebrews stood before the king, he was convinced they possessed something the other wise men of his kingdom did not have. He would give them another trial, if only they would signify their willingness to unite with the multitude in worshiping the image. All would be well with them. But if ye worship not, he added, ye shall be cast the same hour into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. Then with his hand stretched upward in defiance, he demanded, who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hands? In vain were the king's threats. He could not turn the men from their allegiance to the ruler of the universe. From the history of their fathers, they had learned that disobedience to God results in dishonor, disaster, and death, and that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, the foundation of all true prosperity. Calmly facing the furnace, they said, O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this matter. If it be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. Their faith strengthened as they declared that God would be glorified by delivering them, and with triumphant assurance born of implicit trust in God, they added, but if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. The king's wrath knew no bounds. Full of fury, the form of his visage was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, representatives of a despised and captive race. Directing that the furnace be heated 7 times hotter than its wont, he commanded the mighty men of his army to bind the worshippers of Israel's God preparatory to summary execution. Then these men were bound in their coats, their hosen, and their hats, and their other garments, and were cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Therefore, because the king's commandment was urgent and the furnace exceeding hot, the flame of the fire slew those men that took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. But the Lord did not forget his own. As his witnesses were cast into the furnace, the Savior revealed himself to them in person, and together they walked in the midst of the fire. In the presence of the Lord of heat and cold, the flames lost their power to consume. From his royal seat, the king looked on, expecting to see the men who had defied him utterly destroyed. But his feelings of triumph suddenly changed. The noble standing near saw his face grow pale as he started from the throne and looked intently into the glowing flames. In alarm, the king, turning to his lords, asked, "Did not we cast three men bound into the midst of the fire? Lo, I see four men loose, walking in the midst of the fire, and they have no hurt, and the form of the fourth is like the Son of God." How did that heathen king know what the Son of God was like? The Hebrew captives, filling positions of trust in Babylon, had in life and character represented before him the truth. When asked for a reason of their faith, they had given it without hesitation. Plainly and simply, they had presented the principles of righteousness, thus teaching those around them of the God whom they worshipped. They had told of Christ the Redeemer to come, and in the form of the fourth, in the midst of the fire, the king recognized the Son of God. And now, his own greatness and dignity forgotten, Nebuchadnezzar descended from his throne, and going to the mouth of the furnace, cried out, "Ye servants of the Most High God, come forth and come hither." Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came forth before the vast multitude, showing themselves unhurt. The presence of their Savior had guarded them from harm, and only their fetters had been burned. And the princes, governors, and captains, and the king's counselors, being gathered together, saw these men, upon whose bodies the fire had no power, nor was an hair of their head singed, neither were their coats changed, nor the smell of fire had passed on them. Forgotten was the golden image set up with such pomp. In the presence of the living God, men feared and trembled. Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, the humble king was constrained to acknowledge, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants that trusted in him and have changed the king's words and yielded their bodies that they might not serve nor worship any god except their own God. The experiences of that day led Nebuchadnezzar to issue a decree that every people, nation, and language which speak anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces and their houses shall be made a dunghill. There is no other God, he urged, as a reason for the decree that can deliver after this sort. In these and like words, the king of Babylon endeavored to spread abroad before all the peoples of earth his conviction that the power and authority of the God of the Hebrews was worthy of supreme adoration. And God was pleased with the effort of the king to show him reverence and to make the royal confession of allegiance as widespread as was the Babylonian realm. It was right for the king to make public confession and to seek to exalt the God of heaven above all other gods. But in endeavoring to force his subjects to make a similar confession of faith and to show similar reverence, Nebuchadnezzar was exceeding his right as a temporal sovereign. He had no more right, either civil or moral, to threaten men with death for not worshiping God than he had to make the decree consigning to the flames all who refused to worship the golden image. God never compels the obedience of man. He leaves all free to choose whom they will serve. By the deliverance of his faithful servants, the Lord declared that he takes his stand with the oppressed and rebukes all earthly powers that rebel against the authority of heaven. The three Hebrews declared to the whole nation of Babylon their faith in him whom they worshiped. They relied on God. In the hour of their trial they remembered the promise, "When thou passest through the waters, I will be with thee, and through the rivers they shall not overflow thee. When thou walkest through the fire, thou shalt not be burned, neither shall the flame kindle upon thee." And in a marvelous manner their faith in the living word had been honored in the sight of all. The tidings of their wonderful deliverance were carried to many countries by the representatives of the different nations that had been invited by Nebuchadnezzar to the dedication. Through the faithfulness of his children, God was glorified in all the earth. Important are the lessons to be learned from the experience of the Hebrew youth on the plain of Dura. In this our day, many of God's servants, though innocent of wrongdoing, will be given over to suffer humiliation and abuse at the hands of those who, inspired by Satan, are filled with envy and religious bigotry. Especially will the wrath of man be aroused against those who hallow the Sabbath of the fourth commandment, and at last a universal decree will denounce them as deserving of death. The season of distress before God's people will call for a faith that will not falter. His children must make it manifest that He is the only object of their worship, and that no consideration, not even that of life itself, can induce them to make the least concession to false worship. To the loyal heart, the commands of sinful, finite men will sink into insignificance beside the word of the eternal God. Truth will be obeyed, though the result be imprisonment or exile or death. As in the days of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, so in the closing period of earth's history, the Lord will work mightily in behalf of those who stand steadfastly for the right. He who walked with the Hebrew worthies in the fiery furnace will be with his followers wherever they are. His abiding presence will comfort and sustain. In the midst of the time of trouble, trouble such as has not been since there was a nation, His chosen ones will stand unmoved. Satan with all the hosts of evil cannot destroy the weakest of God's saints. Angels that excel in strength will protect them, and in their behalf Jehovah will reveal Himself as a God of gods, able to save to the uttermost those who have put their trust in Him.